The death penalty is on the decline across the country, even though a majority of Americans still support it. 20 states have banned it, and 4 others have a moratorium on executions. Last year, 50 people were sentenced to death, and that's less than half the number from 6 years ago. But in those 6 years, the majority of death sentences were handed down in just 16 counties. Emily Bazelon writes about it in this week's New York Times Magazine. And Emily, let's go through some of those counties and what it is that they have in common.
The counties include big cities like Los Angeles or Las Vegas. They also include suburban areas like Riverside, California. And then there are some rural pockets like Mobile County or Jefferson County, Alabama, or Caddo County, Louisiana. The key findings about these 16 counties and what distinguishes them are that they have aggressive prosecutors who frequently pursue the death penalty. They have criminal defender systems with some serious flaws. And so in some cases, there are defense lawyers who are just not putting up a real fight. And then the third factor in a lot of these places is a history of racism and a kind of continuing cultural legacy of racial bias and racial exclusion.
All right. To point that story out, you go to a place called Duval County. It's home to Jacksonville, Florida, and you profiled a murder case there. 3 years ago, a young man murders a manager at a cell phone store, a young woman. Tell us just a little bit more about what you found there in that story and what it tells us about the state of the death penalty here in the U.S.
This is an incredibly tragic story in which a young 20-year-old woman named Shelby Farrow was murdered by a 21-year-old man named James Rhodes. He walked into a store, asked her for the money in the cash register. She gave it to him, and he shot her in the head. And the state attorney in Duval County, who's elected, her name's Angela Corey, she decided to pursue the death penalty. The mother of Shelby Farrow, whose name is Darlene Farrow, did a lot of investigating on her own about this crime and about James Rhodes. And what she found was a trail of abuse and neglect from his life, which is fairly typical of people who commit murders like this. He had been raised in state custody, and Darlene started saying and thinking to herself that the state raised him. How can they now try to kill him, given the abuse he'd suffered growing up as a child in a state boys' home in Florida? And so Darlene decided to oppose the death penalty in this case, even though she is deeply grieving for her daughter. And she's gotten into a kind of public conflict over the death penalty with state attorney Angela Corey. And that was really interesting to me. It's unusual to see a victim's mother be such a strong advocate against the death penalty in a case like this. And it drew me into wondering about the kinds of evidence that mitigates against the death penalty in James Rhodes's case, the kind I just described, and to ask why Angela Corey was so determined in this case to continue to seek the death penalty, even though the victim's family has a different conception of justice.
No, it is an issue of social justice here. You quote a law professor who studied the death penalty as saying that racism is the historical force that has most deeply marked the American death penalty. So tie that back to what the victim's mother found with the murderer's background, and to what extent that made her think that he shouldn't be sentenced to death.
Well, James Rhodes is black. Shelby Farrow was white. She's also part Palestinian in her heritage. And that is typical of death penalty cases. There's a lot of research showing that when a victim is white, that the defendant is much more likely to be subject to a death sentence. And that's especially true if the defendant is black. So there's something very typical about this case. And when you look at the pattern of death penalty prosecutions in the 16 counties where death sentence remain prevalent, you often see a tilting toward a lot of sentencing of black and Hispanic defendants and a lot of attention to cases with white victims.
And you've mentioned the prosecutor in this case, Angela Corey. When she heard that the mother of the victim didn't want to have the death sentence for the murderer, she said, well, it's basically not up to the family to decide. So how much of the decision does come down to how strong the prosecutor is?
A lot of the decision, particularly about whether to seek the death penalty, is entirely in the prosecution's hands. And what you see in places like Duval County are prosecutors who charge the death penalty in cases where most other prosecutors in the country would no longer make that call. And you can see that in the case of James Rhodes. There is this strong evidence of abuse and neglect from his childhood. He also scored low on an IQ test, so it's not even clear that it's constitutional to execute this man. Those are the kinds of factors that many other prosecutors in Florida and elsewhere would take into account. And to Angela Corey, they are not dispositive. She is proceeding with the death charge despite all of that.
And you've mentioned the role of defense attorneys. What about the defense attorney in this case?
Well, there's an elected public defender in Duval County. That's the system Florida has. It's very unusual. And what it leads to is uneven performances. So there are some really good public defenders in Florida. And then there is Matt Shirk, the public defender who was elected in Duval County, who ran at the age of 35 8 years ago without ever having tried a homicide case. And he came in and fired a group of senior attorneys who had really stellar reputations for providing representation in death penalty cases and lots of other kinds of cases. So Shirk has essentially been accused of gutting that office. He and Angela Corey, the state attorney, are actually up for election on August 30th.
And because they are up for election, you know, they may make the argument that they're just representing the needs and the wishes of their constituents.
Right. And that is what elected prosecutors and, more unusually, public defenders do say. And I think this is a really interesting referendum on exactly that question in Jacksonville and Duval County right now. Is this what the voters want? They have a chance to very directly answer that question in whether they choose to continue the tenures of Angela Corey and Matt Shirk.
Well, there are a lot of excellent prosecutors out there. There are many very good judges and defense attorneys. But, you know, your piece brings up the idea that there are some echoes, perhaps, to the Black Lives Matter movement here, that this is maybe another battleground in a fight against law enforcement's discrimination against blacks. Did you see that at all?
Yes. In some of these 16 counties, one thing that's very striking is the degree to which the criminal justice system remains in the control of a white power structure, even though there's a sizable minority population. So, for example, in Alabama, which has two counties on this list of 16, every single appellate judge, all 19 of them in the state, they're all white. Most of the trial judges are white. Only 14% are not. Almost every elected prosecutor in the state is white. And so you just see this imbalance in terms of who is making the calls and who is reviewing these cases. And it really tilts against African-American defendants.
And not only that, but the jury panels are almost entirely made up of white members. Why is that?
That's because of a test the Supreme Court imposed a number of years ago. The court said that in order to sit on a death penalty case, a juror has to be what's called death qualified. And that means that if you express significant doubts about the death penalty for religious or moral reasons, you can't sit. And it turns out that African Americans tend to have more skepticism about the death penalty than other racial groups. So simply for that reason, more of them are disqualified from these cases. And then there are also prosecutors who come up with specious reasons for striking African-American jurors.
Well, as you say, the prevalence of the death penalty is going down across the country. 20 states, including the District of Columbia, have abolished it altogether. Could the argument be made that the death penalty should be overturned because just a handful of counties across the country are the one imposing it?
You know, the standard for the constitutionality of any punishment in the United States is the Eighth Amendment, and it's about whether the punishment is cruel and unusual. So if you think about this focus on unusual, the less a sentencing practice is actually being used, the more it seems like it's become rare. And the way the Supreme Court has interpreted cruel and unusual also goes to whether a punishment is arbitrary. So one argument is that if a punishment is rarely used, then it is not proving itself to be useful in terms of deterrence or in terms of retribution. And another argument that comes into play here goes back to these issues of racial disparity we've been talking about. If you can show that a black defendant who kills a white person is much more likely, controlling for lots of other factors, to be subject to death, then haven't you showed that there is a kind of racially charged random quality to who gets the death penalty that should trouble us?
Well, Emily Bazelon is a staff writer at the New York Times Magazine and a fellow at Yale Law School. Will link you to her story. It's called Where the Death Penalty Still Lives at Here and Now. www.shelbyfoundme.org. Emily, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.